This is Radio EcoShock.
Part of the great healing is to reestablish our relationship with growing food. The process is good for us, as is the organic produce. Like a great ice field cracking open, the impregnable icon of the lawn is starting to fall. In just one example, the city of North Vancouver is encouraging residents to tear out their lawns and plant food gardens. City Councillor Craig Keating has raised bed gardens in his front yard. The city even allows commercial farming of home yards. One company called City Farm Boy leases yards and even rooftops to grow vegetables. Homeowners get a share of the fresh goodies, as do 38 shareholders, paying an annual fee for their weekly basket of veggies from May to October. This is earth-shaking. People can stop poisoning their lawns, start composting their waste, and begin tasting real vegetables right at home. It didn't travel thousands of carbonated miles. I'm going to play you a clip from the radio show Unwelcome Guests, Hour 2 of show number 523. It is an interview of critical mass biker and Frisco lifestyle changer Chris Carlson. He is talking about his new book, Nowtopia, how pirate programmers, outlaw bicyclists, and vacant lot gardeners are inventing the future today. We'll tune in as Chris explains the urban gardening scene in the United States.
The gardening movement's an interesting one because it represents something of a reclaiming of the commons. And people went, you know, you go back to World War II, I can back up even further, but I'll just start it there. You know, we had this big victory gardens movement in the United States instigated by the federal government because they wanted people to grow more food to help the war effort. And everybody, you know, for a great number of people, that was how they could contribute, was by growing food. And what, by the end of World War II, 45% of the fresh produce consumed by Americans was growing in urban gardens. So when we think about a kind of a systematic transition toward a more relocalized life in which we produce the things we need locally amongst ourselves and practical things like food and energy and transportation and communications is really what I'm talking about here. The food model of having, think of cities as urban food forests. They could be. We could actually probably top that 45% number if there was a, you know, kind of like a let's go to the moon type mentality about let's grow food in cities. Now, where would we do that? In vacant lots? I mean, that's where the movement starts, is vacant, you know, People's Park in 1969 in Berkeley. One of the first things they do after they take this fence down from the university to put up around a lot is they plant an urban organic garden. And that influences people all across the country. And pretty soon you have people doing this in vacant lots all over the place. And it's not new knowledge. It's actually very often connecting to the elders in the community who had already had a great experience of learning about the local ecology, putting their hands in the soil, figuring out what would grow in the specific areas with the specific microclimates and soil conditions and water availability, et cetera. And that knowledge got transmitted across the generations in these gardens. And now you have, from the 70s onward, this proliferation of community gardens all over the major cities of the United States. Now we live this totally fragmented and atomized life in which everybody's moving all the time, either moving from job to job or home to home. And there's not that sense of stability, and there's not that sense of knowing each other. And if you want to talk about sort of, you know, movements for serious political change in our culture, you really need to have stable communities that know each other and trust each other so they can envision it from below. It can't be something just imposed from on high. And so this breakdown in the working class left a bunch of things behind, which was destroyed communities and urban life in back east. There was these giant riots in the late 60s, and they burned down parts of the cities. And then the landlords burned down other parts of the cities. And the city's administrations in New York and Detroit and Philadelphia and places like that abandoned whole areas out of this sort of spatial deconcentration and you know, racism and other obvious factors. And so the people left behind, oftentimes, you know, women-centered communities slowly but surely start to rebuild their sense of community life. And one of the ways they did that was by invading these empty lots that had been abandoned that were full of needles and broken glass and cement and rubble, and clearing them and realizing this is a great space for a garden, for a space for our kids to play, but we have to clear it out. So they would spend a lot of, you know, community would come together to do that. They would plant beautiful flowers and trees, and then they would start thinking they could grow food there, and people would meet there across generations and across ethnicities and across different musical tastes and all sorts of different things. And then you have these amazing thriving spaces. And they really proliferated. You had over 1,000 of them just in New York City. In San Francisco, we have about 120. You know, there's huge areas of Detroit now that are under the control of what's called the Detroit Agricultural Network, and they're actually farming with tractors because there's so much empty land there. And Philadelphia has another, you know, 900 gardens and so on. And you can just find this story in every city. And in these gardens, then, you have these new communities and you have people actually thinking about food security and really producing things for their own needs. And something really beautiful starts to happen with that. And then, unfortunately, there's the underside of this story, which is private property, because finally these vacant lots are not common lands. They're actually owned by somebody, usually. Either the city's repossessed them and are waiting for somebody to develop them into tax-producing revenue streams, or they're privately owned, and the private owners eventually come back and go, wow, thank you for starting this beautiful garden and bringing the neighborhood back from the brink. Now I can sell this, or I can turn it into a spot for, this is great, the neighborhood's gentrifying, my land's gone way up in value, thank you so much, I'll take it back now. And if you haven't taken the opportunity when it was worth nothing to really get ownership over it and actually end ownership over it, that is to say, put it into the public commons through either a land trust scenario or public ownership or something, well, you lose. And that's what happened to a number of gardens, although by no means all of them in New York City. A recent case in L.A. happened. A 300-acre garden down in L.A. across from a food bank was repossessed by the owner through some shenanigans with city council down there. And now, one of the things I like to emphasize is there's a huge amount of common land in every city that people don't really recognize it as such, because it's covered in asphalt and it serves one basic purpose, which is to house private automobiles and occasionally move them. And that's an absurd use of public space. Absolutely absurd. It's a really inefficient and poorly thought out use of urban infrastructure and urban space. So at least as a starting point, I think one of our next tasks is essentially to reassert some control over that common space and for other purposes than merely the shuttling around or parking forever of private automobiles. And instead think of that as the starting point for urban food forests. And what could we grow if we started shrinking streets to half their size? Maybe not every street, but many of them could be shrunk a lot. And that new space opened up could be the place where people are growing food and planting fruit trees and free fruit in every city. And I think as we go forward in our society with all the obvious crises ahead of us, with water, fresh water issues, with arable soil issues, with crashing availability of energy, et cetera, and I'm not a catastrophist. I don't think all this stuff's happening overnight, and I don't think it's going to happen in a way that we can't ameliorate it and move forward in interesting ways together. It seems like a pretty good idea to start taking some systematic action towards relocalizing food production as much as we could, including in cities.
That was an interview with Chris Carlson, author of Nowtopia, How Pirate Programmers, Outlaw Bicyclists, and Vacant Lot Gardeners Are Inventing the Future Today. Find his blog at nowtopians.com. It's really hopeful. And read more in the zine, Processed World. Growing food helped save me. It can help you too. Start small at home, find a community garden, find a community right where you live. We're going out with a music mix that's hard to beat. The famed gospel singer Mavis Staples, produced by master musician Ry Cooter. I could listen to almost anything he makes. I'm Alex Smith. Don't tell me you are down and out. Not when you've got that light inside. Let it shine.
Let it shine. Let it shine.